Hey guys, to a world on fire, St. Paul wrote these words: whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Guys, there's so much news flying at our faces at all times. The Lord wants us to raise our hearts and minds above all the passing stuff of this world, and to set our hearts on things of heaven. And doing that doesn't only help us to keep our peace of heart and mind. It actually changes the world. Dostoevsky wrote, "Beauty will save the world." Boom. Guys, when people are closed to truth, when people are closed to goodness, sometimes beauty just cuts through all the noise inside of us, past the intellect and past the will, past all our barriers and obstacles to the gospel, and cuts straight to the heart. And along those lines, it's not just books that save the world. Sometimes art changes people's lives and saves the world. Our Lady of Guadalupe seemed to think so. So does our guest today, who through art is combating incredible amounts of division and pain in New Zealand. That on one side you have the pain caused by colonialism, on the other side you have this deconstruct everything movement that's so prevalent in the Western world. And he's coming right in the middle of that, stepping right into the fray with art that's drawing people together, communicating the gospel, and bringing about healing and unity. It's really kind of a mind-blowing story, and I'm really excited to share it with you. And again, from New Zealand, wow, what a beautiful place. And speaking about beautiful places, follow the link below this video. You're going to see all the pilgrimages we have coming up in 2025. Our Lady of Guadalupe, we're going to visit her. How cool is that? I'm going to go with Jimmy Wahlberg. I'm sending two priests to Italy to celebrate the Jubilee year and to celebrate the hopefully be there for the canonization of Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. How cool. I'm leading personally another pilgrimage to Poland. God willing, Israel's open. So follow the link below the video. Journey with me. Life-changing experiences. But also, guys, I want to throw this out there. If you become a missionary of joy, those are the people who donate every month to make this incredible work happen. You will be entered into a drawing that we will do in 2025 to win a trip, grounds transportation only, to join me and Jimmy Wahlberg visiting the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico. How awesome is that? But in addition to that, I mean, that's cool and all, but you know what's way cooler? Knowing that you're changing the world with us. We're going to events all over the world, changing lives, giving away millions of dollars worth of Catholic media just to spread the gospel of Jesus and to spread hope in an increasingly dark and divided time. Be part of this mission with us. Be a sign of hope. Be a missionary of joy. And again, get a chance to join me on a pilgrimage. With that, let's dive into a beautiful story about how art can change the world. Damian Walker.
Lovely to meet you.
You too, man. Thanks for traveling here all the way from New Zealand for the Christophanic Show.
I know, it's incredible. As a big fan of Christophanic Show, it is a joy to be in your presence.
Praise God, man. Really, it's an honor. New Zealand, does the airport still have the Lord of the Rings stuff and Gandalf flying on a large
eagle? Yeah, if you fly into the capital, that's your place to go. So you'll see the Gandalf on the big wings, yeah.
That's awesome. All right, New Zealand is 37% Christian.
Correct.
48% nothing. And like during your lifetime, you're 31, you've seen it go up to almost half, saying they just, I don't even want to dignify it by saying half atheist, because that would require a lot of thought. Mm-hmm. And I disagree with their conclusions, but at least the hardcore atheist has maybe grappled with and taken the question seriously. But the nuns, the nothings is like, eh. I don't really. I mean, it's like the spiritual laziness is the great poison of our era. It's like, I don't care. So 48% nothing. The U.S. is I think we're around 25% none, 25% nothing. I don't want to say you're 20 years ahead of us, because I hope that we, thanks to the Christophanic Show and the Missionaries of Joy who support our ministry, we'll stop that. Right? You like that?
100%.
Like
that, that's good.
We're
I like
totally going to stop that
plug
trend.
Plug it out.
But let's say we're 20 years behind you, because it looks like growth is heading that direction. What's it feel like? What's shifted? What are you watching change under your nose in your culture as a young adult as things hit that tipping point of more than half people saying, I don't really care, and Christianity becoming ever more minority?
I would say it's a culture of apathy, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So people, the engagement with faith is dry. So I'd compare it to like a tree. I think you've got a lot of your birch trees that are dying here, you know, and it's sort of, there's a dryness of faith. And it's a challenge. It's a very challenging culture to live in, because people are thirsting for the truth, but the thirst, the living water is not fully flowing down into the culture. So it's a really hard culture to nourish and nurture. So yeah, we're mostly, I would say, an agnostic, apathetic culture that we are in, but there is deep spiritual roots. If you go back to the people of the land, like the Maori, there is a spiritual sense there. But again, it's post-Christian there, I would say.
So the Maori are there's a more of a still general spiritual there. Openness,
yeah.
And the people of European descent,
The Kiwis, generally,
what do you call them? Do you call
the Kiwis, yeah.
Kiwis are just more like me.
Yeah, apathetic. Yeah, it would say you stay there, I stay there, and we'll respect each other, but don't come close. If that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
It's the honestly, as an evangelist,
yeah.
It's the hardest thing to overcome.
100%.
I talked to a guy recently who was, I'm like trying to formulate the sentences. We're like, where's the hook? But there's, he's like, yeah, I respect faith, but I'm just not remotely interested. And the person I was hanging with this person brought up brought up hell. And she wasn't like, you're going to go to hell. But she's like, well, what if there's like these eternal consequences for things like just not caring? And he's like, well, if that's where I'm meant to be, that's where I'm meant to be. It's like, how, you're giving me nothing. Like, how do I even respond to that? And I don't want to be offensive to people who are nuns, who practice nothing, but it seems like this flat existence, like you can't possibly experience joy on the same level as someone who's got a spiritual richness to life.
Well, you're being robbed of hope.
Yeah, there's no hope.
There's no hope.
If there's no destination, there's therefore no hope.
Yeah.
Like no one can say I'm going to become space dust, and that's good, and I still have that thing called hope. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. It's like toxic air. If you don't find the bubble that to live within, it starts to infect you. You know,
it's the CO2.
That's right. Yeah, it's and you don't even notice it happening, because I mean there's the only way to cope with hopelessness through your life is to stay distracted. And I guess we've gotten really good at. I'm sorry, I got to check something real quick. We've gotten so dang good at that. Like, everyone's just smoking weed and on Instagram all day.
That's
so
great.
It's like,
but where's your hope?
Yeah, there's
you
nothing.
Know, because if you think about it, if you replace God and turn it into an idol, you look in yourself. Instagram, you see, this is where we've got the challenge with the church, because we're competing with incredibly beautiful images on our phones, you know, and it's capturing our attention. And the enemy's really good at that. Using distraction and beauty to distract us from the true beauty, which is God. You know, so if the church is muted and quiet, how do you engage with that? How do we go into society? And, you know, it's a real big challenge, a huge challenge.
I was just on a pilgrimage in Italy, and I was in, it blew my mind. I read the whole Gospel of Mark in front of Mark's tomb in Venice, which was one of the coolest experiences of my entire life. But this, the dome of the cathedral, like, it's still speaking to me. It's all gold, and it's like, it just ripped me out of the here and now and all the stuff that distracts me and makes my spirit shallow. And it's like, dude, the kingdom is that dome. It's breaking upon you. It's right over your head. Boom, it's right there. Like, just look up. Dude, just look up. There it is. Okay, it just kind of changes everything when you do. That's the power of art, isn't it?
It's transformative.
Yeah.
Fully transformative. It's the power to open the mind to the spirit through the incarnation. You know, like taking the stuff of the earth, giving up dignity, giving our best to God, and then using the transformative power of beauty as the vehicle to know the incarnation, to know Christ. It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, this is what I love about what you're doing. You are an art missionary, aren't you?
Full scale.
Have you been called that before?
Yeah.
An artist missionary.
It's, people say you're on a mission, but definitely. It's a full scale mission.
Because that is a way to break into, right? Mm-hmm. The complacency. I mean, this is something cool about, you know, when you're in a place like Italy, where they've really preserved what Catholic art is, you got tons of people who are just tourists whose minds are equally blown as mine, who's really into the faith. They look up, it's like, what? You know, the people look at the Pietà and they're moved to tears, who don't even practice the faith. Mm-hmm. I love your path there because it kind of, the image of your path to missionary work through art, it corresponds to what I see in culture. The culture mm-hmm. is in rubble.
Yeah.
It's the rubble of what used to be a Christian culture, an environment where you could just grow up in a place that encouraged you to think about spiritual things because every human being needs hope yeah. or endless distraction, right? Yeah. We weren't as good at the distraction, so it's like, okay, you're in touch with the need for hope, right? But it's this spiritual wasteland. Your path to engaging in art literally was through rubble. So tell us about
literally through rubble. So
about that, yeah.
Back in 2011, we had a huge earthquake that literally wiped out most of our city. So Christchurch had one of the biggest seismological earthquakes, and not only did the earthquake go up and down, but it went side by side. And it was only in New Zealand we use kilometres, so it was 1 kilometre deep, so 1,000 metres. I don't know what that's in yards.
Yeah.
But it was one of the shallowest earthquakes, and it just went through and destroyed the city. Took out of cathedrals, took out churches. So with that need, we had statues thrown down churches and literally smashed down the church. But it was remarkable, out of a lot of the images, the face of Mary was pretty much always remained intact, but the rest of the statue was shattered. So some of the original statues I did were smashed into over 160 pieces. So Dad and I, it was actually started through one of our incredible parish priests, Father Dan Doyle, and he rang me up and he's like, hey Damien, would you like to give, you know, you've done a bit of restoration, would you like to have a go at repairing one of these statues? And I said, sure, Father, why not? So he brought me literally around a box. We have banana boxes in New Zealand, they're very famous. Everyone in New Zealand will know what I'm talking about. So they bring them in, and he literally brought two banana boxfuls, and it was like a swan. The head of Mary was sitting out of it, and then we just unwrapped it, and yeah, 160 pieces just smashed. So over a year, Dad and I started repairing her and building it up. It took a year to do the first one. And then we became a field hospital for sacred art because people go, oh, Damien's doing it. So one after another, after another, after another came in, and they just lined up on our lounge floor. We had to lie them down because every time it shook, because we had like thousands of aftershocks. So there's times we'd be repairing, we'd have to hold the statues under, an wow. earthquake rolled through. So we'd hold onto the statue just to make sure they didn't go flying. But it was amazing.
Wow. You're looking at these 160 pieces. Did you think I could fix that right away? Did you think like, you know, it would take you a whole year.
I know, I didn't realize. But I think for me, the thing was that image belongs to that community. And they've had the heart of their community smashed. So for me, it was really important to give back to the communities what they had lost. You know, like, and it's like family. You don't get rid of your family. And these images are so integrated. And like, they're old. These images were made in France. They came from Portugal. The missionaries had brought a lot of these out on boats. So they'd been wrapped in, crates, and they'd been brought across with our early church fathers. So they've got history, that goes back centuries. So retaining that history is so important, because if we forget our roots, you forget who you are. So you have to be connected into your roots.
You're condemned to just being distracted.
100%.
And that's it. You get the largest statuary in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yes.
I want to say that again because it's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
This man has the largest statuary in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah. What's that mean?
So in 2019, I've had a few wee missions in my time, and I had a visit to Melbourne, and I met an amazing man, Joseph Garcia. We'll just edit that to Joseph. And he said, I'd read this article 15 years ago about this man that had statues, and I was just like, I fell in love. I'm like, I want that. The Lord's got a sense of humor. Little did I know what he had planned 15 years later. So in 2019, the Australian bishops had a conference on regarding beauty and church restoration. Quite a diverse range of speakers. But while I was there, I went and visited him, a little Sicilian man, amazing. And his whole life's work had been dedicated to church artwork.
Wow.
Yeah, so I visited Joseph, and 6 months later, I get a phone call from him going, Damien, I'm moving. Do you want them? Do you want the statues? If you don't want the statues, I'm throwing them out. Classic move. I've had this. Yeah. So he says, okay, fine. So flew over to Melbourne and we purchased the whole statuary. So it originally was one 40-foot shipping container. It ended up being two 40-foot shipping containers.
Just full of statues?
Full of original Italian statue molds dating back to the 1800s. So we got images of St. Michael. So all of the communion of saints.
Wow.
So it's, yeah, it's a beast of a collection.
So you got the molds. You brought a statue with you. Can we see it? And tell me how do you make these things? Because people see these in stores, or they usually see like a resin kind of cheap thing. So that's the real deal.
This is a real deal. That's so this is one of our images. So this is a beautiful Italian made design. So the artist came out from Florence and set up in Australia. And this is an original mold, so it's a huge process to cut, even just to make one of these. So we've got a shell and a negative and a positive, and the shell goes on top and we pour silicon into it, special casting silicon, and then we remove the two parts, and then the process starts of casting, and the casting process is really complicated. So we build up layers of a composite alabaster, which is not your standard. We don't use, like, I use a traditional way of casting. So we build up layers, join them together, and then seal it, and then the painting process begins. So this one's got an ivory effect on it, but...
I love her face.
Really beautiful, and the thing with these images is the proportions are perfect, do you know what I mean? Because a lot of the times now, like, you're purchasing statues, and even in Italy, a vast majority of them, even though they say they're made in Italy, are made in China. So there's a small percentage being actually handcrafted. So these are genuinely authentic Catholic statues.
So you're touching the past, man.
100%.
That's incredible.
So yeah, you're a custodian really of, I don't own it, I'm a custodian looking after it. You know, protecting the past and looking forward to the future. So yeah.
That's a great way to see art, isn't it? Yeah, it's perfect. Okay, let's make sure this table doesn't go over. But if it does, we could have
a restoration.
We could have a restoration happen right now.
Miracle.
We could have him spend the next 300 hours restoring it. We'll just do it in fast motion. It'd be incredible. Yeah. Art's got a way of, I mean, beauty has a way of cutting past, and this is why it's so effective for evangelization, of cutting past the obstacles in the intellect and the stubbornness in the will, and going straight to the heart in a way that just moves us, it wounds us, you know. And I think that's one reason the evil one hates beauty.
100%.
Give me an insight into the scene and where it's at. And are there still a lot of people deconstructing things that are beautiful?
It's happening
and,
still.
So I don't get it. I really don't get it.
If you kind of look at going back to the original philosophy that was through that movement, was that the church, we're going back to our roots. So I can see where the concept came from, the muting of the churches, okay, if that makes
sense.
That's
well said, yeah.
So they wanted to go back to a less distraction and focus on the Eucharist, but it became more of a focus on the persona of the priest.
Sure, sure.
Which is a challenge, but I can see a little bit.
Where
it's not pure evil. Yeah. This is objectively looking at it from the most, yeah. But then looking...
But sometimes it ended up looking like a Star Trek or something, weird, you know?
The force be with you.
Yeah, I don't understand. Anyway, go ahead, sorry.
I mean, I think the best way to sum up, though, is if you truly understand what love is and the love of the Father towards us, this is the best way to understand the way that our churches should be. So when you fall in love, I love this kind of thought process. So when you fall in love, or when you meet your wife for the first time, right? So it was that, like Pope Benedict said, that arrow that wounds, so it hits the heart, and it's that breath moment of, oh, who is she? And you freeze. See, as men and as women, you have the option to know, you've got two options when you encounter this. You can either go towards it or be afraid of it and run away from it. What is this? You know, what is this? Like, what is she? What's she about? So you court each other, you get to know each other, you engage with each other, you learn about each other, and you fall in love. And then where is she from? You meet the family. And then when you get married, it's the coming together as one, the bridegroom and the bride and the church coming together through marriage, and you create a family. Then we turn this analogy to the church. So when we encounter a church, we enter the church building. It's that eros, the arrow of love that strikes us when we enter. And it should be that sursum corda, lift up your hearts, that moment where Christ, it's the encounter of Christ in the church, where our breath, we're frozen in awe.
Mm.
Then, like, it's what is this? Like, what? You know, what is this thing that we're encountering? What is this beauty? Where is it coming from? And you engage with the church and you pray with the church. And then that beauty will then lead you into knowing the Father. It's a relationship. Where's it coming from? It's Christ and calling us the bridegroom, as we the people, calling us in to know him, into the intimacy of his heart. And it's that beauty that leads to love, that leads to truth, as the vehicle of love. And it's the love of Christ on the cross. And it's the encounter with the Father through the saints and through his mother, leading us to know him more on a deeper way. And I think that's a beautiful way to encounter why we should have beautiful buildings. It's the love of God expressing out to us, like Adam and Eve in the garden. You know, when we encounter the beauty of the garden, it's that moment of awe. Awesome. When we're literally like struck with the awe and beauty. And it's profound, because then we can enter into the sacred mysteries that lead us up to focus on the mystery of the liturgy.
It should shock and stun you a little bit.
100%.
That was beautifully said, man. I got some chills. I love the quote from Pope Benedict XVI, that the greatest apologetic, the greatest answer to people's questions about the faith is saints and beauty.
Yeah.
Right, because it just, it's that moment of shock and awe, and the questions that I had suddenly become irrelevant. Yeah. As I see beauty and I just want to be part of it. I just want to jump into it. It has the power to evangelize, has the power to build culture and lift us up to actual beauty. It's also got the power to heal.
Yeah.
God knows this is why he gave us Our Lady of Guadalupe, right? Which, if you look at the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, it wasn't just to evangelize and correct the problems in Aztec culture. Yeah. It was also to correct the problems in colonialism.
Yeah.
And to bring about a new people from where there was two that were divided and hated each other. And that's why we have Mexico. That's why we have the Mexican people. Is literally a DNA merge.
Yeah.
That came about after 10 million people converted to Catholicism. They saw Our Lady looking like an Aztec.
Yeah.
With Aztec symbols, which was something that the European settlers weren't doing. They were literally just tearing down the Aztec temples and building churches with the stones, which didn't go over well. so go figure, yeah. So then you have this healing happen. And we have a Guadalupe moment with your art.
Yeah.
Right? We'll pray, because we need grace to accompany these initiatives. So pray for this initiative, because it can really bring about a lot of healing.
Yeah.
Tell us about what the bishops commissioned you to do. Now, you're not quite the same level of artist as Our Lady of Guadalupe,
no,
which is literally from heaven.
I give her full credit. I'm not the Lord's artist. I work for him, but I'm not officially Lord.
Yeah.
So I'll bring up. So
I love that the bishops wanted to do this, because the art, again, bypasses all the rhetoric, the dialogue, even the let's cut to the heart. Yeah.
So this is Kohata Maria, which is Our Lady of New Zealand. So back in 20...
They named your art Our Lady of New Zealand.
Not directly, but that's how it... anyone outside the country. So this, the artwork is actually called Holy Mary, Mother of God, but the Māori translation is way too long.
I think we just upped largest statuary in the Southern Hemisphere to artist of Our Lady of New Zealand.
Yeah.
Way to go. That's incredible, man. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So this image is Te Araha Maria is the name of the pilgrimage and of her way. So the way of Mary, which is beautiful. So this image back in 2019, it would be 2020, during COVID, there was a call to the bishops of New Zealand to rededicate the country to Our Lady, which was amazing. So they ran a competition and they said, hey, look, I had a call from one of the priests. And he said, Damien, would you like to quickly submit a drawing? And I rang them and I said, oh, I've got 10 minutes. They said, no, it has to be by a certain time. So we entered the competition, and by the grace of God, they accepted our commission, which was a miracle in itself. So we started a beautiful process of a pilgrimage into understanding the culture on behalf of the bishops. So the bishops collectively in New Zealand commissioned this piece, which was incredible. So to have, they wanted a priest, a piece to bring unity and healing to the people, and also honoring Our Lady Assumed into Heaven in a new and contemporary way. And I thought, right, Lord, how do we achieve all of this in a piece of artwork? Like, it's a big challenge. So I went on a pilgrimage. Once I found out and received the commission, I contacted my good friend Anthony. He's Māori, and his family's got ties to the Kingitanga, which are the Māori king. Wow. And Anthony and Haley, they embraced me and welcomed me into their family. And I did a full 6 months cultural immersion into understanding the actual culture and the virtues of the people, the Māori people, and then understanding the role of Mary in our country and seeing her in light of how Bishop Pompalia, our first Bishop of New Zealand, saw her.
Tell me what I'm looking at here.
In this image, she's actually in the mode of karanga. So she's in the mode of call. So on calling, yeah.
Okay.
And they would put down a fern. So if it was peace, they would accept. If it was war, it could end fatally for the woman. So then, so it was kind of the challenge. They would send a challenge out. So Our Lady is eyeballing us and looking us directly in the eyes, and her leg is moving forward, and she's eyeballing, locks eyes with you, and she's calling out to everyone on behalf of God the Father and the communion of saints, and challenging us, because she's in the mode of a challenge. Do you bring war, or are you going to bring peace to Christ? So she's in the full stance of like warfare.
Wow.
So she's moving forward to encounter us, and she's got the patu, which is a club, she's armed with the patu to show the physical weapon, and beside that is the rosary to show the spiritual weapon.
That's so cool.
So Our Lady will fight for us. So yeah, the patu is especially beautiful because, okay, in warfare, if you got hit by a patu or a club on your head, it would kill you straight away.
Yeah.
So it's designed for attacking it's a weapon for the head. But if you think about it, these days, our spiritual warfare now is for the mind. So she is protecting the minds and hearts of our people.
Wow.
So
what the painting represents that.
So it's you can't see it. She's actually walking forward.
Oh.
So when they karanga, it's a call. They eyeball you and they will walk forward. And her hand, you can't see it here, it's called wedi wedi. So they move their hand forward and they're saying welcome. So that the wedi wedi, they'll lead you on. So she's calling and leading you on.
Wow.
So if you're not in the culture, you won't understand it as clearly, but for the Māori, they will automatically pick up these signals in here. And she's holding the 12 prong of the apostles, which represents the seed, the root of faith, which she's come to plant in the land and bear fruit. And they're in the kuru, which is a fern, closed up. And it shows, you know, the perpetual movement of the Spirit moving through her wedi wedi, through her call.
Oh, man. Tell me about their outfits.
So Jesus is in a kahukiwi. It's the brown outfit. So in the culture, when a kiwi bird dies, it's a little round bird. It's flightless. So we're called kiwi. So we're named after kiwis. But they pluck the bird, and the feathers are rounded like this on its back. And then when they pluck it, they turn them upside down. And the chief or the highest ranking person in the area, they will gift this as a tonga. The tonga means treasure to him. When the chief wears it, it moves. The wairua, the spirit, moves through the feathers and it shows life, perpetual movement.
Wow.
But it also shows the kiwi never dies. Translate that to Christ.
It shows you the kiwi never
dies. It shows the spirit of the kiwi is alive. And it shows the mana, which means the highest grace someone can have in the land. But then it makes sense for Jesus, who is eternal high king, high priest, high chief, when he is wearing the kuruwai, the kahu kiwi, shows that his mana, but also represents the resurrection. So that's why in this image, the child has his hands pierced.
That's
but
really
to show the healing through the sins, but also that he is here for us.
Wow.
So it's really profound.
And it's really moving to think about that. Is that I've never seen an image of Jesus wearing one of those.
It's specifically to our region. Yeah.
That's incredible. And I love we could show this again in the edit, but you got the gospel writers, and one of them has the Māori tattoos on the face.
So in our culture, they would tamoko is a word of a tattoo. So a woman earns a tamoko and it will go under the chin. But the tamoko of the tattoo, I will say tattoo, the tattoo or tamoko from her chin is on the kaitiaki, which is the protectors, to show that's Mary's tattoo. That's her grace. That's the highest honor that we can give her. Like the temple is a Holy Spirit and it's the embellishment of the temple. One other thing I'd like to point out is on her, there's a little green, this is called a tiki, and this is really important. This is important. So this, in the Māori culture, the tiki sits here, and mothers will generally wear it, and it represents the unborn baby. Wow. So this tiki was made from 12, all the regions. We took every line from every tribe, is represented in this image. And it shows that, you know, we are the children of God. We are her children, and she's held close to the heart of the mother. So the closest that we can be to her, we can't be closer to her heart than her heart. So for us, for the cultural aspect, we hang the kiwi, it's hung on the side, and the baby's head is towards Christ to show that he's through Our Lady to Jesus. So we're bathed in the Holy Spirit.
Boy, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So yeah. It shows that she stands for life.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And she's a protectress of life. And with her cloak, that we, the children of God, we can seek refuge under her korowai and protect us.
Mm.
So under the spiritual battle, our mother can come and intercede and protect us.
Man, guys, one of my new favorite Marian images.
Yeah.
I just want to commend the time you took to create something meaningful. Because that kind of thing goes on way longer than you do, right? Mm. I think we live in an era, well, back to our era of distraction, where we create nothing but distractions. Mm. You know, it's the things that we put out to the world are a mile wide and an inch deep. Yeah. You know, and you said, you know, I'm going to slow down, take 6 months just listening.
Yeah.
You know, and lo and behold, here's something that in 300 years there will be this temple, this shrine to Our Lady with your art in it, and that's.
And I mean, it's, and like I say, with this image, I held the paintbrush and she painted, if that makes sense.
That's awesome.
If it was beautiful, it's all God's. If it's not good, I take full credit for it. And I'm, you know, like, and the presence and the power that Our Lady has, and getting to know her in an intimate way as well, on a deep way, getting to know the mother and the son on a way that is so deep and personal, it's profound.
There's a lot that does war on what I was just talking about with creating meaningful, deep things. Mm-hmm. You know, the evil one has waged a war against art to make sure that when people walk into churches, mm-hmm. they're not moved by a dang thing, right? Mm-hmm. But also on the art, the heart of the artist, mm-hmm. right? There's a book called The Art of War. There's another book that's a play on that called The War of Art, right? Yeah. It's a battle to create meaningful things, I think more than ever,
mm-hmm.
Because we're constantly distracted.
Yep.
We're constantly distracted by the practical,
yep.
right? Distracted by gauging the worth of what we're doing
yep.
in an instant feedback way.
Yep.
You know, like how many likes did I get on Instagram?
Oh, that's great. You know, yeah. you can reach your 1 million trending, you know, you get the viralness.
Yeah, we got the viralness or not as many likes, therefore it doesn't mean anything. And so we don't have the long view that artists have always had. Of let's create something that maybe is not appreciated in my lifetime, but is around 500 years from now. Mm. You know, then there's the war of the practical. Is it gonna pay the bills?
Mm.
Right?
Yep, 100%.
Yeah. But this is something that not just artists grapple with, but anybody creating anything meaningful grapples with it. And as an evangelist, I grapple with this all the time.
You understand?
It's the constant battle to stay focused on the call and what the Lord wants and not to give in to the temptation to make viral stuff that's, I could hit controversy all day. I know how to go viral.
Yeah.
So, but there's just more noise. Like, let's stay focused on the thing that lasts, which is the message of the gospel and changing people's hearts. It's the same thing as art, right? Yeah. So tell me about how that battle plays out inside of you and how do you win it? And I'm asking for not just artists, but everybody who's struggling right now to stay focused on what matters.
It's not easy.
No.
No, it's definitely not easy.
What eats away at you? What does the battle look like for you?
Distraction. Constantly distracting.
With what?
It's easy, social media.
Yeah.
You can get on social media, Instagram, TikTok. You know, the noise And then also, I suppose for me, as a business owner and as an artist as well, there's stress involved in that, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's fear, genuine fear. If you don't have fear, you know? Totally. And I think for me, though, like even just creating these pieces is warfare. It's not just a standard, oh, great, I'll paint a painting. If I did contemporary art, fantastic. That'd be great. I wouldn't have to think. But when you're doing this kind of art to move souls, and acknowledging, first of all, that you're a sinner, and seeing yourself, and creating through the eyes of God, looking into a mirror of faith for people, but then as you polish that mirror, as you polish the gold leaf, you suddenly realize that your soul was not reflected as it should be, you know? It's that grapple, that pain, but then understanding in the love of God and that hope that you will get there. And, you know, in the darkest of times, the light of Christ, that flame, we focus on the light, even though it can be super, super, super dull, but knowing that it's a light of hope. That when that charcoal, when that flame hits the despair, the darkness, the dryness, the spirit, when the time is right, and going through the art is painful, any process, you know. I think if you haven't had pain and haven't had struggle, wrestling internally to create something beautiful, love is hard, love is not easy. But I think the Lord allows everything to then bring that dry wood of despair, when that flame hits it, to bring light. And to become the light of faith, as a sinful dry wood, but letting the Holy Spirit breathe and fan that, but to not give up hope, even though it can sometimes, you know, I like to say, you know, God will never give you more than what you can handle. But it gets very close.
Yeah.
Very close. And I've had this time and time again. Oh, yeah. Every commission has its thing. But understanding that when you look upon, I think one of the most beautiful things I heard is when you gaze upon Christ crucified on the cross, when you understand the nails, when you understand the suffering, but when we encounter the beauty of Christ in the suffering, that Christ can touch us on a way that even though we may be at our last breath, we might be at our last point of despair, but through that beauty, the love and the beauty of transcendence, to call us, like Mary, she's calling us to meet the Son. And we are like the apostles in Jesus and Christ in the boat. The waves are gushing, the noise is loud, but Christ, she's calling us, she's saying, come, come. And it's soft. It's not in the loud noisiness of conversion, it's in that soft, quiet voice which the Lord reaches us.
Winning the war of art, it's about clinging to Jesus Christ. That's it, man, right?
Staying to the boat.
Yeah, and it's the fighting that, I like that you put the word fear on it.
Yeah.
Right, because like same in my ministry, it's like I got 6 kids, and I got grandkids, I got people to feed, and what thing do I make to help feed? And the Lord's like, no, just keep clinging to me, dude.
It's
not about your things that you're doing. I'm the provider. You know, the Lord's saying, I'm the provider, cling to me. And then if I don't do that, dude, you feel it start to end.
Yeah. And going out into the deep is very scary.
It is, yeah, yeah.
Like, throw your net down, but I can't see the bottom. Just throw your net out. No.
Yeah.
And I love the imagery of Peter and the boat. You know.
I'm looking up a quote, by the way. You inspired me.
But I love it, you know, like, Peter sees Jesus. And Jesus says, come, he starts walking on the water. He physically sees Christ, and he falters and fears and starts to sink. And Jesus reaches out and says, come. Peter, come on, what are you fearful? You know, and he saw Christ. And for me, that's profound. You know, like, that's why it's so important for us to engage and see Christ in these images, to give hope.
This is what you just described. It's that holding onto the light of hope. It's also what art does for us. And I think it's appropriate to land here because we started by talking about Lord of the Rings. This is Samwise at the end, you know, when they're climbing Mount Doom and everything's dark and everything's exploding around them. And there, peeping among the cloud rack above a dark tor high up in the mountains, Sam saw a white star twinkle for a while. The beauty of it smote his heart. as he looked up out of the forsaken land, and hope returned to him. Let me read that last sentence again. The beauty of it smote his heart as he looked up out of the forsaken land, and hope returned to him. For like a shaft, clear and cold, the thought pierced him that in the end, the shadow was only a small and passing thing. There was light and high beauty forever beyond its reach. Amen. There's the hope. There's the hope that you bring to the world as an artist, man. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for what you do.
No, thank you so much. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I love you, brother. Thank you. And hey, how do people find out about you and commission you and all stuff and buy your art and everything?
The Studio of St. Philomena on Instagram, Facebook.
Say it again.
The Studio of St. Philomena.
The Studio of St. Philomena.
Yep. The that's light long, and the darkness.
That's a long URL, man. Is that the website?
Long URL.
The Studio of St. Philomena. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, so
.com?
.com, yeah. So if you need your church done, statues, or just something beautiful, we're the place to go.
He's the man. And Instagram, what is it?
The same.
The Studio of St. Philomena.
Studio of St. Philomena.
Praise God. Thanks, man.
Thank you so much.